Hey guys, headlines! Headlines, headlines, headlines!
Here's a headline for you! A headline for you! A headline for you!
I am Oprah, guys!
Oh, wait, no, it's you get a headline, right? You get a headline.
You get a headline, and you get a headline, and you get a headline.
My Oprah impression has really gotten bad. Go ahead.
Okay, so the Houston Texans were supposed to bring in Jason Verrett for an interview yesterday, and he spurned them, the son of a biscuit. He instead signed a one-year, $3.6 million deal with the San Francisco 49ers. Guys, are the San Francisco 49ers a better franchise than the Houston Texans? Because that's what I'm reading this as.
I have no clue. Look, Kyle Shanahan has yet to win anything or do anything. It's just like, it's a little bit almost... They've been calling it Texans West. It feels a little bit like Texans West in that we keep making excuses for like, well, look, he doesn't have a quarterback. Well, look, it's going to take some time for the roster to turn over. Well, look, I need to see it. There was a reason Kyle Shanahan didn't perhaps get a head coaching opportunity earlier than he did, and it was because people questioned, okay, are you just an offensive coordinator and not a great head coach? I need to see that he's a good head coach before I crown them at least even mediocre.
The 49ers are obviously not a better organization at this moment. I would take Kyle Shanahan, the offensive coach, over Bill O'Brien, the offensive coach. No, and I'm not saying head coach. I'm just saying offensive coach based on what he has done as an offensive coordinator. As far as it relates to Jason Verrett, Seth and I would have both brought him in as somebody behind Jonathan Joseph and Bradley Roby at this point. But clearly the Texans felt like, hey, they were going to have some kind of limits on Jason Verrett's money. I'm sure his agent knew about that, which is why he signed in San Francisco for 1 year, $3.6 million.
They should have tried to push the fact that he is a TCU grad. Bring one of those horned frog people out there wearing a purple polo or something like that. Like, hey, man, yeah, those, don't you want to come back? Come on home.
Those TCU fans are on the sly. Like, for a Christian university, they are aggressive. They are an aggressive fan base. I'm not saying, like, in an unchristian manner or anything. It's just a little bit. It always takes me a little bit by surprise.
Yeah. One of my friends, Will, he lives in Dallas now, but he has this giant, like a purple 1960s, but way chromey and shiny purple pickup truck with like all sorts of TCU stuff on the side of it.
Oh, yeah.
He's pretty intense about his TCU. I think the Horned Frog fans that are out there, they're pretty intense.
You're saying a chromey, purpley pickup truck, and I'm trying to envision any possibility where that's not really cheesy looking.
Pretty cool,
does
actually.
It actually does, right.
Yes.
It's hard to pull off purple on a vehicle. Like, you got to get it just right.
It's hard to pull off purple on anything, I think.
It's not easy.
You know what I realized yesterday as I was driving around, and I wasn't even under the influence of anything, obviously. Human skin tones are almost universally awful car colors. You can't, you know, because I was looking at my emojis and everything and like messing around with skin tones and everything. And other than like jet black and pure albino white, there isn't a human skin tone that's, can you imagine like a Caucasian colored car? That'd be the most hideous thing in the world.
I've never thought this, but it's a solid observation.
I'm very pasty white.
You're
guys.
You're alabaster there on your underarm. Like, so you're close to, it's too pink though. Or
too
pink. Caucasian. Like, it has to be, you have to be either albino or jet black. And if not, your skin tone, like almost anybody listening right now, their skin tone is not a good car color.
Back to Jason Verrett.
Oh, yeah.
So
that's what we were talking about.
So, no, it's fine. Seth, you had a story about you. I guess you visited the New York Giants. I'm not going to take it away.
Oh,
yes,
that's
I wanted
right.
to trigger
okay.
you.
That was a thank you. Thank you for reminding me of that. So the point is this. Jason Verrett signs with the San Francisco 49ers for $3.8 million. And you think, okay, well, how come you didn't want to hear what the Texans' offer is? Being in the building, man, they turn the screws on you. It's like going to a timeshare presentation on vacation. Like, they use all the psychological tricks. They blow you up, tell you how awesome you are. They make you feel a little bit guilty if you don't say yes. They just make it feel comfortable and right. It's like any good sales organization, like a good car dealership, is going to figure out all the right buttons to push. So they do that with you. And they're pros at doing it, you know? So, like, a lot of times when you're in there, and I was in, when I was with the Giants, this is what I was in, because I would have been going into my 11th year. This was, mind you, the year before the Giants won the Super Bowl. I was with them, but I was coming off of an ACL, and I was in my 30s, and my agent kept telling me, like, don't agree to a contract. No matter what you do, don't agree to a contract. By the time I was sitting in the room with Coughlin for, like, the 98th minute, and he was turning the screws on me that entire time, and I'm trying to be polite, Like, I was almost like in a mantra in my mind. I was saying, like, don't agree to the contract, don't agree to the contract, don't agree to the contract, as I'm shaking my head and saying, oh, yeah, sure, sure. But he kept, like, trying to tell me how important it was to sign the contract right now. Now, Coughlin is probably an extreme example, but that's what happens. They just, it's really hard to say no when you're on that first visit, unless your agent is really in your ear. Now that I think about it. Man, my agent really screwed me over.
Well, he cost you a ring.
I could be sitting here with a big-ass gaudy Super Bowl ring right now.
And the guys like McClain can't be ripping you for not having a Super Bowl ring.
Oh, you didn't win a Super Bowl, did you? Like, yeah, no, sorry.
Thanks, John.
Just forgot, John, about all your best-selling books and whatnot.
Maybe if you were harder on the team, you would have been a little more aggressive.
Your Pulitzer Prizes. How many of them do you have stashed away back there? Yeah.
713.
So where's that? You know what? You know, honestly, this is what bothers me sometimes. It's like when people just like make casual jokes about like how crappy the Texans were back then. Well, back when you guys played and you were awful and atrocious. Like, well, wait, what the fuck? Where else in life is that acceptable? They're like, well, you know your livelihood that you care a lot. Remember when, the company you're with just sucked and they were awful. Yeah. Like if I meet somebody that worked at Enron, like I'm not gonna sit there and bash on Enron for like 5 minutes and make light of probably what was a pretty
usually
horrific time in that person's life.
I really enjoy actually meeting people who worked at Enron because I'm like fascinated their inside stories of it. But I'm not gonna make light of how
miserable their lives must have been like while they were going through like, all
dude,
that.
That skilling like really screwed over a lot of people. Can you believe it? Unbelievable.
You worked for Enron? Oh, what a clown. No, but that's what like McClain will do. Like, you guys were awful. You sucked. I'm like, you look like a backwater newspaper rag writer. What the hell? Like, you guys were so horrible. I couldn't even believe they let you in the building. Oh. Bum Phils would have run you out of town on a rail.
Okay. Headlines on a Friday. Mike, Seth, and Paul on Sports Radio 610.
Guys, the old honey badger, he likes him some social media. He's had an interesting last 24 hours on Twitter. He's been going after Landry Locker. He's been going after
you,
Paul Gallant. He's been going after random fans that happen to say anything that could remotely, you know, step on his toes. Well, he did have a nice and happy introductory press conference with the Kansas City Chiefs. But what's interesting is that Mike Meltzer and I found out about the highlight of said introductory press conference from Jeff Rosen on Twitter, who typed out, Tyrann Mathieu said he and his Texans teammates saw what Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs did during the regular season and wanted no part of them in the playoffs. You read that and you're like, whoa. So the Texans were scared? Well, here is what Tyrann Mathieu had to say at his press conference yesterday. So you can
hear we talked about playing against the Chiefs the last postseason, and quite frankly, we didn't want to play against them. I thought any time I watch highlights or watch the Chiefs game, I always saw a quarterback that, the gunslinger really is what comes to mind, but he takes care of the football. You know, he's not reckless with it. So you could tell that, he studies a lot. He knows where his receivers are. He knows where his teammates are. And I think ultimately he takes care of the football and he scores points. So, I think that makes my job a lot easier.
So you hear that.
He was just being casual and fun, and it wasn't a big deal. He didn't mean anything. For the most part, like his public statements, he's been very respectful of everything. He's been going back and forth with people on Twitter who, many of whom weren't necessarily even like, they weren't tearing into him or anything, and they weren't directing it to him, like by adding him on Twitter. They were just saying, okay, he wasn't that great, this, that, or the other thing. And he's like aggressively going after those people. That's where you just worry. I worry for Tyrann Mathieu's own mental health. He doesn't have to be worried about that kind of nonsense right now. In terms of Pat Mahomes being a gunslinger, I'm actually glad Tyrann Mathieu brought that point up because he's more like of a trick shooter, I think, than a gunslinger. If you think of a gunslinger, somebody who's just going to come into town and gunfight anybody and just stand down at high noon in the town square.
Mahomes. He'll try some unique throws.
Right, but he's very precise about it all. He's just very, he's very crafty.
He's generally controlled with his risk taking as a general point about Mahomes. I was actually fine with what Mathieu said. When I read the quote last night about the Texans not wanting any part of the Chiefs, I got, I actually got physically angry.
I got triggered. I was in a bad mood last night, and I saw that when I was at the gym, and I was like, it was like, you know what? You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to tweet out something that's mildly nasty. And it really wasn't nasty. It was just like, hey, I'm going to tweet this out, and I'm going to see if Tyrann Mathieu, while he's digging in his Twitter mentions, actually can find this one. Good luck on the defense that fired its entire coaching staff. Release Tarik Berry. Release Justin Houston. Let Steven Nelson starting quarterback go. Traded D Ford. I'd at you, but you'll find this soon enough. Winky face. Smiley face. Smooch, smooch, smooch.
To put a bow on this whole thing, I am not thrilled with what the Texans have not done this week, but I am genuinely happy they did not match the contract the Chiefs gave Tyrann Mathieu. $14 million a year for me was just way too much money. When you're paying a dude $14 million a year, you're paying him to be an impact player. And Tyrann Mathieu this past season was a solid player, above average player. He was not an impact player. And I think Kansas City letting go of Eric Berry and signing Mathieu to be a big-time player, I think it's a really questionable move. Hopefully it works out for them, I suppose, but I have my doubts as to whether it will.
In terms of Kansas City themselves, am I getting too far off topic here? Because I want to bring up something a listener brought up.
Go ahead.
From, according to NFL insider Leroy, which I don't think
Leroy.
I don't think this is a valid account at all, despite the fact that it has many followers. So everybody listen, this is a disclaimer. I'm not taking this seriously. It says the Kansas City Chiefs have a strong interest in acquiring Texans pass rusher Jadeveon Clowney. KC determined to make it work as long as physical comes back as expected. Okay, unquote. That's a complete balderdash because there is no physical scheduled. So like that's a complete joke of a tweet. I cannot state I cannot state that as many times as possible.
That is PFT commenter's dog.
Right. Oh, is that okay.
What? That is PFT commenter's dog. They have an account.
Right. So, like, I'm making this point. I didn't even want to read it because somebody's going to hear that for, like, 10 seconds and think that was a real report. But the sentiment is interesting in that the Chiefs did just get rid of their two best pass rushers because they don't fit the new scheme. There are teams out there that are looking at Jadeveon Clowney and thinking, huh, Clowney, who could be a 4-3 defensive end, can be a 3-4 outside linebacker, is good versus the run. There are a lot of things that the Kansas City Chiefs would hypothetically like about Jadeveon Clowney. And that's where I wonder with the Texans. I don't know if the Texans really have any urgency to sign Jadeveon when they have him locked down and they know there's other teams out there that are thinking the exact same thing.
And they can negotiate up until July 15th, essentially, with Clowney. But that trade possibility will remain out there until something happens from a contract standpoint with Jadeveon Clowney. Mike, Seth, and Paul on a Friday. I want to do something real quick with you guys.
Oh.
Before Mark Vandermeer joins us and tries to talk me off the ledge at 8 o'clock over the offensive line.
He will try.
The Jaguars have a new franchise quarterback in Nick Foles. I want everybody listening right now to put themselves in a spot where you're like sitting in a room and or you're just listening and you're trying to be sold on a quarterback. I want to know if this is selling you on a quarterback. Here is Tom Coughlin on bringing in Nick Foles and starting a new era with him.
Yesterday, March 13th, 2019, launched the start of the new league year. This is a new day, and we charge ahead. This signing today signals change and a new start for the Jacksonville Jaguars. I am proud to introduce Nick and Tori Foles to you and the Jacksonville community today. Nick is the right person, the right quarterback, for our team and our community.
And Tom Coughlin, who Seth played for 5 years, went on to explain specific attributes as to why Nick Foles will be an upgrade in Jacksonville.
Nick is a winner. He has faced adversity early in his career, but through hard work and perseverance, he led his team to a Super Bowl championship in 2017, and in so doing, was selected as the coveted Super Bowl Most Valuable Player. The next season, 2018, Nick stormed back with his team again and very nearly brought his team to the NFC Championship game. Nick has earned the respect of his teammates, coaches, ownership, and fans wherever he has been.
Was this an induction? What the hell is that?
He's obviously reading, but that's not selling me on Nick Foles at all.
It's almost like a weird, bad hype video. If we played that to, like, let the bodies hit the floor and everything. Play it over, start it right. It's gonna sound bad. It sounded like, yeah.
Well, we can try it. Hold on. Let's reset all this. So this is Tom Coughlin. Let's play the second part, the winner part. All right, so here we go. Tom Coughlin introducing Nick Foles.
Nick is a winner. He has faced adversity early in his career, but through hard work and perseverance, he led his team to a Super Bowl championship in 2017, and in so doing, was selected as the coveted Super Bowl Most Valuable Player. The next season, 2018, Nick stormed back with his team again and very nearly brought his team to the NFC Championship game. Nick has earned the respect of his teammates, coaches, ownership, and fans wherever he has been.
You hit the post there.
Let Nick Foles hit the door. Let Nick Foles. Oh, you turned it off. Here we go. I ended it myself.
Because
it was at 59 seconds. We didn't want to pay royalties on that.
Yes.
I've already got to play Brock Osweiler royalties for that Allstate ad. I don't want to have to pay Coughlin royalties now. Drowning Pool royalties.
Major warning sign with a quarterback is whenever somebody says he's a winner. Always a dangerous sign.
That's what Gary Kubiak said about Matt Schaub.
He's
right
a winner.
Before the ugly end.
What has he won?
Somebody asked Gary Kubiak.
Nick Foles actually won something.
Somebody specifically asked Gary Kubiak, like, why is Matt Schaub a good quarterback? I think it was John McClain. Why is Matt Schaub a good quarterback? And Kubiak paused for like 2 seconds, was like, well, he's a winner.
Like, wow, terrible.
Jeez.
The first answer everyone gets to. Yeah, and Tom Coughlin did sound like he had a gun pointed at his head, I think, while reading off that statement as emphatically as he did.
No, that's him. Like, I've been in a lot of meetings with Tom Coughlin, and it's just, it always sounds exactly like that.
He's
practiced it like 20 times, and you feel bad for him because he's trying like hell to be impassioned.
Do you think he reads it in the mirror?
Yeah. He does all the tricks and everything. Like, he rehearses that stuff. He reads through it. It's scripted. And he's very proud of the ones that he thinks are really good.
You know, if the Falcons never hired Steve Sarkisian as their offensive coordinator, Nick Foles never becomes a Super Bowl champion. Never happens. Doesn't happen. All the Falcons had to do is score once in the red zone in that first round playoff.
Second
round playoff game. Steve Sarkisian's sloppy ass as offensive coordinator is the reason that Nick Foles is a winner. It's a butterfly effect.
Learning on the job.
This is a new day.